The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, management, or licensee of this station. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores. I'm Pendlin' Ron, and you are listening to Bicycle Talk. It's January 18th, 2021. Welcome to Bicycle Talk with my friendly co-host, the lovely Dr. Fran Storch. Yep. A show where we talk about bicycles, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news in cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you're listening on Facebook Live, you can comment on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page. And if you're listening by way of audio or podcast, it's bicycletalk, @gmail.com. We're recording our shows on Mondays now using Facebook Live due to the pandemic, and we will continue to do that for a while. You can listen to the shows on Wednesday on 91.7 FM or whus.org. You can listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org, iTunes, or now on Spotify. Okay, Ron's rant of the week. Here we go. Now, this one just completely took me by surprise. I did not see it coming. I went to click into it the other day because they were posting it live on Facebook, which would have been a really, really cool thing to be able to watch it there. But the Norwegian Cyclocross National Championships were canceled because of weather conditions. It's a cross race. How bad was the weather in Kristiansen, Norway on Sunday? If anyone has a weather report, I tried to look it up and figure out what was going on over there. Please let me know what's going on, because I've never seen a cross race. Well, I can't say I've never seen a cross race canceled because of weather, but rarely have I seen a cross race canceled because of weather. Very, very strange. Anyway, I thought I would rant about that today because it's kind of a rant. On a positive side, so we got the update on Fran's condition. Fran with the broken arm, which isn't broken anymore, and she is now burning it up on Zwift and
it's very good.
On the kicker downstairs. Yeah. And how you feeling, Fran?
I feel pretty good. My arm, I mean, it's still, if I move it the wrong way, it definitely still feels sore, but when I'm on my bike, I don't notice it. Of course, I haven't attempted an outdoor ride yet. I've been kind of chicken because of the temperatures.
There you
and
are.
I know that a lot of people have been less chicken and have gotten outside. So, you know, snaps to you and kudos to you.
Yeah.
And ride-ons to you. But I haven't gone outside yet just because it's been, I mean, it's been maxing at maybe 45 degrees. And
it's not my weather. For sure.
And so the only thing I would do out there is I'd get some miles and come home. And
then we'd have to clean your bike and we'd have to deal with, you know, I mean, it's just wear and tear.
If we get into a situation where it's going to be high 40s and low 50s, I'm going to try to get on the road. But right now, this week, it's going to be low 30s. So I'll be in Watopia.
Okay.
Yeah, and so my arm's feeling, it's really pretty much feeling very good. As far as I know, the you know, it's a matter of healing the soft tissue, and you know, I still have to do some physical therapy, and I'm taking collagen, and I'm taking some ligament building supplements and vitamin C and stuff like that. And so hoping that by the time I do want to get on the road, I'll be okay. I think if I got on the road now, I would probably be okay.
I think you're all right.
Yeah.
I think you're all right. But I would wait until the temperature cracks closer to 50.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just a little bit more comfortable. That's 50 degrees Fahrenheit here for those of you who are listening to us from around the world. And I know we have some around the world listeners. So anyway, well, that's good to hear. I've got another positive side here to comment on. If any of you out there have been wearing cycling socks over the years, you'll know that there is a company called Defeat,
yes,
which is, it covers Defeat. So anyway, this is kind of a cool thing, but Defeat has introduced socks for healthcare workers and medical professionals. And so Defeat has completed development on a new sock design, the Decompressor Medical, made specifically for those who work in the medical and healthcare field. The Decompressor Medical has features to help medical workers deal with the unique demands of the workplace. As the virus spreads, Defeat has readied its first shipments of decompressor medical socks. With our long history making socks and accessories for endurance sports like cycling and running, we knew we could craft socks to help medical workers become more comfortable in their jobs, said Shane Cooper, founder and chief sockologist of Defeat. A sockologist. I love that. Boy, Shane's still there. That's really great. We pushed hard through the 2020 to develop socks that could also help our healthcare workers in a safer way. Cooper added, we're experimenting with a lot of fit and fiber combinations, and we found what we are looking for. Defeat chose an antibacterial, antimicrobial, antifungal fiber made with CopperTech technology, a copper zinc yarn. The yarn allows the sock to inhibit the growth of microbes that can accumulate on the feet and lower legs and can reduce the spread of extremities that come into contact with those areas. So there you go. That's kind of a cool thing. That's a bicycle company that has jumped in on this and is doing very good things for us. So that's always nice to see. Always, always. Okay, so that's my other on the positive side. And then we move on to, so here it is. The maintenance minute. As I am looking over bicycles in the garage area where we store our N plus ones, I am looking right now, this last week, I'm looking at tire wear. Because there are things you need to pay attention to when you're getting your fleet, I'm going to call it the fleet, ready for spring. And if you've got that time to do that, because, you know, it's cold outside, you're not really riding your bike outside that much, and you got a little bit more time to work on your bikes. Every week we talk about something different here to check into and maintain on your bike. So 7 signs to replace your bicycle tires. Some people go, well, my tires are fine. They're still holding air. I'm fine. I'm okay. Well, not so much. Okay. They have a lot of things. So number 1, worn down tread. Pretty easy to spot. If you look at your tire and it's got that's one of our other markings here is flat. If it's a flat spot along the center ridge of the tire, which is the number 2 sign right here, there's a really, really good chance that your tire is getting close to a wear point where it's just not going to be as protective when you run over something that's sharp. And also, you know, you're losing rubber on the tire. An interesting thing to check if you have one of those tires that has like this incredible flat spot running across the tire, it's usually on the rear tire, rarely on the front tire, because that's where 75% of the weight is, so they wear faster on the back. But when you take that tire off the rim, check out and see how thick the rubber is on. You can feel when a tire is ready to be replaced. They get paper thin after a while. Sometimes it gets so thin that you actually start to see casing as you're checking really close to the tire. If you've gone that far, you waited too long, because now you're really, really on a tire that's just not going to hold up really well when you get out onto the road. Or rarely would I see a mountain bike get to this point, but I suppose it could happen, but I doubt it very much. If you're riding on a tire on a mountain bike that has that much tread loss, that tire's not working anymore when you ride off road. So anyway, so you want to check for your worn down tread, which is easy to spot, flat spot along the center of the tire. Number 3, cracked rubber. Take a good look at the tire. See if the rubber is cracked or cracking. One of the best ways to do this that I have found is to deflate the tire and then just kind of pinch the tire along the way and just take a look and see if some cracks are starting to develop. It's not terrible. I've ridden on tires that have cracked rubber, but the more the rubber is cracked, the more moisture is allowed in, which is going to get into the casing, which is going to rot the casing. So you really probably should get rid of that tire if it's got cracked rubber on it. Just a shout out on that one. If you experience, let's say you came into the fall and you just started having a flat tire every week on your bike. And it's like, why am I having so many flat tires? Constant flats is another thing to check out. So if you have a record of, wow, I rode all summer long, my bike was great. Everything was wonderful. And I ended up the season with like 3 or 4 flats. What the heck's going on? Let's take a look at that tire and look for number 5 on the list, cuts and holes. What you'll find is a piece of glass will go into your tire and it may get ejected out. If you're an old bike weenie like me, then you'll probably, if you see yourself riding over any kind of glass or debris on the road, you tend to reach down and clean your tires off. I've been doing that forever, and for some unknown reason, I have never cut my hand doing that. But you do end up pulling things out of your tire. You can feel it when it happens. You can actually feel something that's going to probably work its way into the tire. So you need to look for those cuts and holes. You need to look and see if there's a piece of glass in one of those holes. Sometimes they just sit in there forever until eventually they work their way in. And if they're sharp enough to be in there, then that sharp piece is the point that's going into your tube and giving you a flat. So you need to look for cuts and holes and see how bad they are. Make sure they're not so bad that you can see casing. If you can see casing, again, moisture gets in, not good for the casing. It'll eventually fatigue your tire. So worn down to the casing. I mentioned that earlier. I have a story of a friend who rode his bicycle to the casing, rode his rear wheel to the casing, and then got a flat. And we all pulled over, and I repaired his flat because I can't stand to watch anybody else repair their flat tires because it takes 5 times as long as it takes me because I've done thousands of them. Anyway, the long story, I can't keep my hands out of it, and I'm too impatient to wait for someone to do it themselves. But anyway, I take a look at the tire, and I went, you got to, like, get down to the bicycle shop. I had the bicycle shop at the time. Get down to the bike shop tomorrow and let me get you a new tire. Well, 2 weeks later, he showed back up, and I had put the dollar bill in the inside and flopped it over 5 or 6 times and made a casing patch for him so we could get him home because there was a hole in the casing. That's where he got the flat. And he showed up about 2 weeks later with an even worse looking tire and said, yeah, I got to get this tire fixed. I said, yeah, I've been riding on that, have you? And he said, well, yeah, I ride every day. You know that. Pulled it out, opened up the dollar bill. It had 6 or 8 holes in it from the folds over. It had one layer left to get through. Don't do that. Please don't do that. That's not a good idea. So if you're worn down to the casing, that is a sign that you are going to have an immediate problem. Please don't ride on it. And don't rely on the casing patch that you put on to get you home to ride on it for the next 2 weeks. Just don't do that. Bubbles or deformities, last on our list, number 7. If your tire shows any kind of a bubble or I guess we call that an aneurysm in the medical world, you don't want to ride on that tire anymore. No. It means that what has happened is your tire's going to have a stroke. Very good, Fran. Thank you for the medical perspective on that. Yeah, so what happens is that the casing starts, the threads start to break apart, and when they do that, you'll get the aneurysm or you'll get the bubble on the deformity. Get rid of that tire. Just get rid of it. If it was, you know, if you put it on 2 months ago and now it's got that, get rid of it. It's probably happening because you smacked a pothole really hard or a curb edge or something, and it's going to eventually fail on you. So you want to take care of that too. So it's winter. It's the off season for many of us up here in the North Country, and it's that time to look at your bike. And my maintenance minute today was talking about the 7 signs to replace your bicycle tires. If you need any more feedback on that, you can reach me at bicycletalk1@gmail.com. I'd be very, very happy to talk to you about it more. Okay, here we go. Let's move on to the next thing here. So I found this great little article, and it was Meet the Anti-Tech Bro Scooter CEO Calling Out Her Competition. All right. So I found this cool article about a woman by the name of Candace Shia. And Candace has a bicycle scooter company, which is also an e-bike company And it's kind of a cool thing. And so she's emerging in the scooter world, and she's hoping to give her male micro-mobility counterparts a run for their money. Okay, so Candace is the founder and CEO of VEO, a manufacturer of both standing and seated e-scooters across more than 40 markets. She's the only woman CEO of a major e-scooter company, and she's not afraid to take a seat at the table and dish out a hot take to her competitors. Okay. So she's the first truly profitable micro-mobility company, according to some, Lime's announcement of profitability with an unexpected news flash. So Lime Bikes would be another one of those bike companies out there. She says, I must have forgotten to take a global victory lap for achieving the most basic fundamental business, bringing in more money than we spend. Xia wrote in a post alluding to Lime CEO Wayne Ting's claims that Lime was the first micromobility company to reach a cash flow positive quarter. So how does VEO claim to have reached profitability, and why did Xia wait nearly a month to refute the claims? This article talks about how she runs her business. And she said it's because of how they run their business. It's always been a struggle. But especially right now, after Uber went public, it's really not worth it to grow that company at all costs without considering profitability in the business. So I know that they face a lot of challenges to raise another round and sustain their valuation in order to survive. So anyway, she's done a lot of really cool stuff, and she's very progressive. It's really, really cool to see this woman CEO entrepreneur who has really accelerated her e-bike business and e-scooter business. So cool to see. We're going to keep our eye on her and see how she makes out over the years. I think she's probably going to be in the news a lot. This is a very male-dominated industry. The tech industry, a lot of male domination here, and it's just really, really nice to see this woman excelling and doing well. So anyway, I wanted to shout her out because I think it's important. It's a good thing. And then we're going to talk about some more things here today. One is, do you know what day it is today, Fran?
It's Harry's birthday.
It's not just Harry's birthday. Come closer to my mic, please.
It's Lucy's birthday.
It's also Lucy's birthday. Who else's birthday is it?
Well, it's let me see.
I'll give you a clue.
Well, it was MLK's birthday on Friday.
I understand it was on Friday, but this is the official
celebration holiday
of Martin Luther King Day.
Yes.
So, did you know that Dr. Martin Luther King rode a bike?
No, I didn't specifically know that.
Yeah, Dr. Martin Luther King Jr. rode bikes. There is a great site that I found, and it is called blackcycling.com. And it's a really cool site, and it's got all sorts of things in here about, well, first of all, there was another article written in a different site on Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s legacy and bicycling. How do we build a coalition for bike justice? Now, this was written all the way back in 2013, so it was kind of interesting. But there were some crossovers here to how we can build cycling versus building recognition like Dr. King was looking for. So one of his statements, first opening statement, was we have also come to this hallowed spot to remind America of the fierce urgency of now. This is no time to engage the luxury of cooling off or to take tranquilizing drug of gradualism. Now is the time to make real promises of democracy. So this is a crossover. Okay, obviously, we've got a lot of things going on here in the U.S. right now, which are uncomfortable at best, but very recognizable. This is also a time in the U.S. that since we have gone through all of this virus problem that we have here with COVID, that there's a lot of talk about infrastructure changes, and it really does influence the African-American society here in the U.S. It makes a big, big difference. Transportation is key. If you take a look at big cities, you're going to see that big cities that have poorer populations in them, and it doesn't just have to be African-American here, they are, they don't have a lot of cars per capita in like big cities like our state, Hartford, Connecticut, or if you get down to Bridgeport, Connecticut, which is our largest city in the state, the number of cars, it does not outnumber the number of people there. So it's really, really different. And what you have to do is you have to really build those infrastructures by either mass transportation, which right now a lot of people are voting against mass transportation. So let's go with safe transportation. Safe transportation is eliminating or reducing. I can't eliminate it because we need to have the motorized vehicles for one reason or another. But let's reduce the number of motorized vehicles and increase the number of non-motorized vehicles and make our big cities safer and healthier than they are right now. And this is a chance, and it goes along with a lot of the teachings of Dr. King. There's a lot of crossover here, and I wanted to mention it because this is a special time, of course. So this particular article kept taking reflections of Dr. King's statements and crossing them over. And so the next statement here is, now, in order to answer the question, where do we go from here, which is our theme, we must first honestly recognize where we are now. All right. This author says in 2008 that they were just beginning to see the flight that lay before them as a bicycle advocate and researcher, had a growing awareness of the cultural barriers sustaining transportation in Southern California, the anger bicycling bodies stirred with our audacity to use public streets. But it was a stranger's death that opened my eyes to a deeper level of disempowerment on bicycling. Near the hometown in San Juan Capistrano, one night on October 2007, a young woman who was driving drunk hopped the curb in her car and struck Jose Humberto Barranco, who was riding home on the sidewalk late at night from his job in the kitchen at Denny's. This stretch of bad road had very infrequent bus service, once an hour, none late at night, and perhaps Barranco couldn't afford a car, so he commuted by bike. Los Angeles Times reported that Barranco had planned to spend Christmas with his wife, 13-year-old son, 8-year-old daughter at the central Mexican state of Morelos. A family member said he hadn't seen them in nearly 2 years. It's terrible. It's just terrible. This gentleman wasn't even in the road. He wasn't even in the road. He was on a sidewalk, which, you know, I have my opinions about that. But he was trying his best to be safe at night, and a car jumped the curb because the driver of the car was intoxicated. Terrible. So, next King comment, I am not unmindful that some of you have come here out of great trials and tribulations. So, next comment from the author, for me, bicycling is a choice. For others who may never escape economic exploitation, no matter how hard they work or how hard they hope, bicycling is a necessary evil. Bicycling has a double negative image. Either you bike because you're an entitled jerk, or you bike because you're the scum of the earth. That's how well said is that? In January 2008, I heard fear in the voices of homeowners in Long Beach who opposed a bike lane on their street. They said they didn't want to invite people to camp out in their historic neighborhood. I felt hate in the squealing of brakes and the revving of engines as people swerved their cars around me as I biked to school. Yeah, what's so... You know, there's a good question. What's with the people who are so so aggressive with their vehicles that they have to make this statement of showing you that you were really in their way by the way they pass you. What's with that? What's with that? That's just kind of a weird, weird, weird aggressive thing. But anyway, so next King comment here is, let us therefore continue our triumphant march to the realization of the American dream. Let us march on segregated housing until every ghetto of social and economic oppression dissolves and Negroes and whites live side by side in decent, safe, sanitary housing. So there it is. Let's add to that. Let's, as we get all of this housing together in the cities and people have safe places to live and nice places to live, let's make sure that every time we put something like this together, that there's a cycling route for them so they can use their bicycle to get out to the grocery store or to work or wherever they need to go. Again, the author, jumps in on this too, and there's just a whole bunch of really cool statements here, and it's here's one that kind of stands out. And I'm simply saying that more and more we've got to begin to ask questions about the whole society. We are called upon to help the discouraged beggars in life's marketplace, but one day we must come to see that an edifice which produces beggars needs restructuring. So, you know, if people don't have the money to meet the great American dream, whatever it may be, that you own an automobile, that's just kind of odd. Let's not look down upon people because they ride bicycles. Let's look up at them because they ride bicycles. Look at what they're doing for their health. Look what they're doing for their fitness. Look what they're doing for the ability to save our world from pollution. We should be admired, not treated the way we are. So anyway, I think that we're going to see a lot more of this. COVID, I've said it before. I'll say it again. It's a very, very terrible thing. And it has caused a lot of death and a lot of changes in people and people's lifestyles. But on the good side, it is bringing the bicycle to the top. It's like the bicycle is the cream that is rising to the top of the milk. It's a beautiful thing. It really is. So another great statement, another Dr. King statement, darkness cannot put out darkness. Only light can do that.
Yeah.
Yeah. So there's just like a whole bunch of great statements in here. I just think it's wonderful. Dr. King, we miss you. We miss what you have done. But we can see that you certainly helped us a lot. And anyway, being that it is officially the national holiday, Dr. Martin Luther King, I just thought I would bring it up. And I have a great shot, and I'll try to paste this over onto my Facebook page, of a photo taken back in 1967 of Dr. Martin Luther King having fun on his bicycle.
Aww.
Yeah. Isn't
he's
that cool?
Riding down a little sidewalk and it's a hill.
I think it's kind of a walkway, bikeway, because as you look at it, you can see other people on bikes and other people walking on it.
Oh, yeah.
So just kind of a cool thing. And then, of course, it brings us to this website, which I had mentioned before, which is certainly worth checking out because there's lots of cool stuff on here. It's called blackcycling.com.
Nice.
And it has a lot of information in here from different people, including we will probably talk about a lot of this. I'm gonna make sure I save a lot of this out for next month because it is the Black History Month,
yes.
Right. Which, why does it have to be Black History Month? Why can't it be Black History all the time?
It should be Black History Life.
Yeah, it should be all the time. But, you know, it is something that is highlighted at that time. It was, yeah, I'll tell you what, I saw Ben Harper live at UConn at Black History Month up at UConn, which was really cool. It was a great concert. Really great.
Seal rides a bike.
Right. So we're going to go over all that. We're going to talk about Major Taylor next month. And then there's a really cool article. I didn't get a chance to take a look at it. There's a YouTube video out on it, and it's about a bicycle nomad talking about biking the Underground Railroad. Because, you know, the Underground Railroad is the thing. So there's some neat stuff on this site as you dig into it. And I can't wait. It was a great discovery that I made this morning when I was looking up information about how Dr. Martin Luther King relates to bicycles.
That was a good thing.
Yeah, it was really good. So I found some great stuff. It's kind of cool.
So let's talk about how Martin Luther King relates to my family.
Okay, let's talk about how Martin Luther King relates to your family.
So I said before that today is my nephew Harry's birthday. And a year ago, he had his bar mitzvah.
Mm-hmm.
Was it a year ago? Or was it 2 years ago?
Might have been 2 years ago. Anyway, we'll just kind of semi get you in here.
Well, right, because he turned 14 last year. So he turned 13 in 2 years ago, mm-hmm. and because his 15th birthday is today. Anyway, so he had his bar mitzvah, and Nancy and her family attend a Reconstructionist synagogue. Reconstructionist is very progressive mm-hmm. in Judaism.
Yep.
And the synagogue in Willimantic right here is also Reconstructionist that I belong to. Anyway, so my nephews, my brother-in-law, Abraham, is from Liberia. So
right.
he's of African descent, and my sister is Jewish like me. And so they have three children, Harry, Tally, and Marley. And Harry's birthday is today. And so anyway, because he was born very close to Martin Luther King Jr.'s birthday, his rabbi encouraged him to do a Haftarah that was based on the work of Martin Luther King. So it really helped him to dovetail his African heritage with his Jewish heritage and some of the principles that Martin Luther King talked about and how they relate to Judaism, because a lot of the principles of Martin Luther King really relate to Judaism. And there's a lot of things that we do in Judaism that are similar, you know, the idea of social justice, of equality, of and we have a great equalizing force in Judaism, which is that everyone is equal. The only being that is elevated above us is God. And that means rabbis and priests and any other everybody sins, and everybody is responsible in Yom Kippur, and nobody's better than anybody else. So equality and social justice are very much principles of Judaism. So it was really nice. So when Harry did his Haftarah, he did some of it in Hebrew, but most of it in English, and talked about the principles of Martin Luther King and how they related to Judaism. So that was great. So happy birthday, Harry. We'll see
you
tonight.
Happy birthday, Harry. Yeah, we'll see you tonight. We'll probably do a FaceTime-ish
yes.
thing or whatever it
yes,
is that we do.
Facebook Messenger.
Yeah, or a Zoom or whatever you want. We can also Zoom him in now.
But
so
I don't think it's gonna
if
be
you
Zoom.
Want. But anyway, so next thing on my list is, let's see here. Let's get back up here. Got a great little piece, and I should say also shout out to, I forgot to say this earlier when I was on the positive side, I wanted to shout out to Transport Hartford, okay? Transport Hartford's a great Facebook page you want to check out and see what's going on. I'll tell you a little bit about them. Transport Hartford, advocates for biking, walking, transit, commuter rail, and multimodal transportation as an essential part of sustainable and socially just city and region. This includes carpooling and vanpooling. For Hartford and the region to succeed and grow, it has to move beyond single-occupancy vehicle travel, both culturally and with appropriately designed infrastructure. Join the movement. So a big shout out to Tony and friends out there and what's going on out there. I hope to touch base with you sometime today if you're listening. I'd like to talk on the phone. Remember talking on the phone? They're doing some really, really great stuff. And every time they do something, of course, I'm going to their site and I get a lot of notifications from them. I would consider joining in with that group if you can, because I think that it's good. Keeps you in the loop in our state as to what's going on here, better than other areas that I have found to give me my information. So And in that, I got a posting that came through, and it was from the Streets Blog USA. That is a usa.streetsblog.org. And anyway, the Senate is considering a $10 billion input for highway removal. How about this? This is big news. This is really, really big news. So highway removal. Why would you want to remove highways? Well, let's talk about that a little bit. Cities might soon get federal money to tear down inner city highways that federal dollars built in the first place and that used money to invest in the communities of color that those highways destroyed. Shortly before the holiday recess, then Senate Majority Leader Chuck Schumer and a coalition of 25 Democratic senators introduced a $435 billion economic justice bill. It's called Bill S-5065 that included a $10 billion pilot program aimed at helping communities tear down urban highways and rebuild the surrounding neighborhoods with the needs of underserved communities in mind. The Restoring Neighborhoods and Strengthening Communities Program, that's what it's called, known amongst advocates as the Highways to Boulevards Initiative, would only be available for projects located in regions with high concentration of low-income residents or residents of color. This is going to be huge for Hartford and Bridgeport. Perhaps most critically, the initiative would make significant funds available specifically for the community engagement and capacity building necessary to identify what underserved residents actually want to do with all the valuable land freed up when the freeways are torn down. Such funds are rarely the focus of federal transportation grants, which typically prioritize hard construction costs over the dignity of surrounding communities. There's already funding available for highway deconstruction in various pots of money at the Department of Transportation, especially as so many of our highways reach the end of their life, said Lynn Richards, the president and CEO of the Congress for New Urbanism, which collaborated on the writing of the bill. And of course, there always seems to be money for highway construction. What there's almost no money for are for the feasibility studies, the capacity building and coalition building with the people who are actually impacted by the highway projects or by highway removal projects. That's what's really special about this bill. Okay. So, this is a really good thing because it's giving a little bit more voice to the people who live in these areas that are less than desirable for some people, but necessary for others. And this is a huge push because it works out through the Department of Transportation. This is what I've been talking about for the last year since COVID hit. Infrastructure change is coming. It is time to get the bicycles and the pedestrians involved here because this is huge. We can make safer cities now, safer, more inhabitable, easier transportation-oriented cities that can help a lot more people. And you know, the bicycle is a key function here. The thing about Americans, and this is true, is we're really, really selfish. And we have a tendency to want to get into our personal vehicle, which has been the vehicle of choice, is the internal combustion engine vehicle, and get in that vehicle all by ourselves, so that we don't have to deal with any distractions of anyone else in our vehicle with us, and drive it to wherever we're going. You can do the same thing on a bicycle. You can do the individual thing. No problem. You can be all by yourself if you want. No problem. Really hard to text and drive. Definite problem. But this is the alternative. This is the proper answer here. Let's rebuild our cities with the money that they're going to project towards cities, billions and billions of transportation dollars,
and rebuild the infrastructures of the cities. Rebuild the arteries and the veins that go out into the neighborhoods and bring people together. This is a beautiful thing. You know, there's something about... I've been riding my bicycle for my entire life. I started out as a child riding my bike. I graduated to the point where I hopped on my bicycle when I was 20 years old and rode it across the country. I got to meet so many people who were not afraid of me because I was on a bicycle. They were not intimidated by me because I was on a bicycle. People talked to me. They were very happy to talk to me. It was a great, great thing. This can happen again and will continue to happen if we rebuild our infrastructures towards cycling and pedestrian activity. This is really, really, really important. So this is not, it's not increasing net capacity for vehicular travel. This is for us. This is the stand. I've been telling you, you got to take a stand. This is the year. This is the time to get out and make yourself vocal. Talk about it. Learn about your neighbors. Learn about what's in your neighborhood that can be improved upon. And let's get it done. The money's there now. Now it's time. And it will get better. It will get better as we start to see a decrease in the poor health of people because they're riding their bikes more, as we start to see the decrease in the basically the damage of the infrastructure because, you know, bicycles don't cause potholes in the roads. We don't do that. We're not that type of vehicle. And neither are pedestrians. We don't do those things. Those holes that you see, that damage that you see to the asphalt on the roads is done by motorized vehicles, heavy motorized vehicles. We have progressed right now at this time to a level of heavier motorized vehicles than we've ever had in the past. And it's because everyone's driving a truck now. It's ridiculous. And this is why the roads deteriorate fast. So we're throwing highway funds at the ability for us to continue to stay inside of our motorized vehicles. Wrong answer. Need to make a change on that. There are very, very good answers to solving these kinds of problems. It's just you have to open your eyes and you have to look. I said this to my son years ago, and he'll either remember it or he'll go, "Oh, Dad, I can't believe you said that on your podcast." But I used to tell my son years ago, open your mind, your brains won't fall out. And, you know, it's like you just got to look outside the box every once in a while and see what the possibilities could be. You know, I've said it last week. I'll say it again. Take an hour out of your week and put it towards doing something about changing the infrastructure of cycling, whatever it is, even if it's just a quick phone call or an email to a state representative or a federal representative that needs to hear what you have to say about how important cycling is to you. This is all good stuff. It's all really, really good stuff. So that's... I just thought this was great. $10 billion for highway removal. Removal, not rebuild, removal. It's great. It's great, great, great to see. By the way, if you on a side note on that, the town of Glastonbury in Glastonbury, Connecticut, they made a progressive move to take out a couple of traffic lights. And in the replacement of those traffic lights, they put in traffic circles. I'll say it again. I've said it before. If you're looking for an hour's worth of entertainment, ride your bicycle into Glastonbury and sit by one of those traffic circles and watch how much people are confused that are driving motorized vehicles. It's hysterical. It's worth somebody getting out there with a YouTube video just to watch. The drivers of the vehicles are aggressive. They are confused. they really truly don't know what they're doing, and they don't understand how it all works. So big shout out to the town of Glastonbury. Let's put a YouTube video together that explains, or maybe even the state DMV that explains how to use a traffic circle, which, by the way, when used properly, is one of the safest ways for a bicycle to get through an intersection. Anyway, just saying. That's a just saying.
I think my experience driving through, because I go to Glastonbury a lot, driving through those traffic circles, it's not just about whether I know how to drive through the traffic circles. It's that everybody's uncertain, so I don't know what the next person is going to do when they get into that circle. And that's
exactly
confusing.
It is.
So people don't know how to navigate them, so I'm very cautious, because even if I was going to do it the right way, I don't know if somebody else is going to screw up.
A traffic circle, for those who don't know how to use them, is a merge situation. There is a yield sign as you're entering the traffic circle.
Right.
It is definitely
That's
there.
Right.
It says for you to yield. When people see yield, they stop. When they stop, they have now 10 or 15 cars behind them that cannot get through the traffic circle because they didn't merge into it. When you merge, I merged into one of those traffic circles a week ago because I was up at our favorite bakery, our favorite gluten-free bakery
in Glastonbury.
Yeah. And I merged into it just like I was supposed to. And the person behind me that was coming through at breakneck speed, because, you know, we're all race car drivers in this country, just nailed me with the horn really, really hard. And it's like, you know what? Just slow down. Traffic circle wasn't made for anything over 10 to 20 miles an hour max. You don't need to be going through it at 50. It's just traffic circles. Anyway, I went off course here a little bit, but I just find that the traffic circles in Glastonbury are a great source of amusement. And I wonder how many accidents they've had. I should call the police department and ask them how many traffic circle accidents they've had so far. Be interesting to see. By the way, traffic circles in relation to traffic lights allow 30% more traffic to pass through them if they are used properly. Just so you know. Okay, I said it. Moving forward. So this is a great thing that we're going to start reconstructing the roads that are going through cities. We'll see a lot more traffic circles, I would imagine. You take a look at progressive cities like Portland, Oregon, Seattle, Washington, pick a city in California, could be any of them. I know Denver, Colorado is doing really well right now. Minneapolis, huge. This is good stuff. This is really, really good stuff. So let's hear it for this Senate considering $10 billion for highway removal. I am in anticipation of a lot of things changing here really, really soon. So there are a number of little tweets that go in here. Pete Buttigieg has one of them. Black and brown neighborhoods have been disproportionately divided by highway projects or left isolated by the lack of adequate transit and transportation resources. And he states here, and this was back in December 20th of 2020, in the Biden-Harris administration, we will make righting these wrongs an imperative. This is great. This is good stuff. So we're going to start seeing things that are going to be great. It needs to get a robust advocate support, and it's time. It's time. This is someone says here, it's happy dance time. And it is. So the incoming transportation secretary, Pete Buttigieg, seems eager to push highway teardowns. In a statement on Twitter, just 2 days before the Highways to Boulevard program was introduced, he pledged to righting these wrongs wrought by the last century's racist transportation planning and imperative of his stewardship at the USDOT. His office would not be directly responsible for administrating the new discretionary grants. But we now have someone who is moving into office once officially appointed that is paying attention to this. This is great news. This is great news. It's going to change. Bicycles are going to be a lot more important in the next 5 years. You watch. You mark my words on that and come back and slap me in the face with it if I'm not right. But I believe that we are on a very, very positive course right now. So good stuff. All good stuff. So I thought that was kind of fun. I wanted to talk about that. And and then we go on to some other things that are just not quite as much fun. But Bicycle World Texas will replace Mellow Johnny's Bike Shop in Austin. Okay, what are they going to replace them with? Supporting police bikes. Remember we had that whole police bike problem that we were running into this last summer when we had all our Black Lives Matter protests, I will also say the very safe and sane protests that went along with that. And then we had police departments that were using their bicycles and the chain rings on them as weapons. Oh gosh. Anyway, so there were a lot of companies, and I talked about this probably 6 months ago, that said, we're not going to sell to the police departments anymore. The police departments are going to use our bicycles as weapons instead of as adequate transportation for solving problems. And so there were some companies, like I believe it was, where was it here? Bikeco of North America, the distributor of Fuji bikes, suspended sales to police forces in June, citing reports of those bikes being used as weapons at protest marches. Fuji police bikes are sold through most bike shops. So Mellow Johnny's had a $200,000 contract, and it was in its second year with $52,000 of that expended to supply bicycles to police officers in Austin. And they broke the contract. They were unhappy with how the bicycles were being used. So there is a new company that has come in, and they are going to take over that contract, and we will see how things go. Austin, you guys you're like the blue dot in the middle of the state of Texas. Do it right. Don't screw this up, please. You know, this is, we're watching you. We're watching you very, very, very closely. So the downtown area command with the bicycle force in Austin has more than 150 bicycle patrol officers. You're on the right track. Don't use them as weapons, please. Just don't do that. So I thought that was an interesting little side note to pick up, because I always try to get follow-up information in, if I can get follow-up information in, to let people know what is going on out there in our bicycling world. We're going to save this one for next week. This is interesting. Secure parking would boost New York City bike use. Okay, a nonprofit bicycle and pedestrian rights group released a comprehensive report advocating for a more secure bicycle parking in the city, arguing that this deficiency suppresses commuting and has a disproportionate impact on lower-income residents and people of color. And this is a great point. When was the last time you went into a parking garage? Because it seems that we keep building these fool things. They're building one in downtown Willimantic right now, by the way. You go into that parking garage, and there's no secure place to put your bicycle. There may be a bike rack outside of the garage, but it's out in the elements. It's not inside. It's not within sight of the attendant who's sitting in the pay booth as you leave. What are we missing here? What are we missing here? What exactly are we doing wrong? So anyway, Transportation Alternatives released The Power of Bicycle Parking, an easy, affordable, and effective way to save lives, encourage cycling, and create a fairer New York City. And they released this this was published January 5th, so it was shortly after that. It provides specific recommendations for improving bicycle parking infrastructure across the five boroughs, saying people are less likely to ride when parking is unavailable. No kidding. Despite lacking secure parking locations, bicycle commuting in New York City is on the rise. So is theft, which has increased by 27% during the COVID-19 pandemic, with one in four households having had a bicycle stolen. Shame, shame on you. It's like back in the old cowboy days when we were watching Westerns on television, the one thing you didn't really fare well with was stealing a person's horse. Because it was their transportation. It was, you know, that's what they had. So it was like a big crime to steal a horse. Well, it's a big crime to steal someone's bicycle, too. It's their own personal transportation. It is an inexpensive way and very effective way to transport yourself. So, you know, anyway. But, man, bike theft is up 27%. Big problem there. Problem is not necessarily due to the rise of you know, the demand for cycling. It's also due to the lack of being able to bring more bicycles into our country. And we're not on the A-list, folks. I hate to tell you this, but we are not the country that is going to get bicycles shipped to them first. We are, if we have a very, very expensive bicycle that's out there that, you know, someone would like to sell to our country, we're probably on the A-list there, but we're not for the general population. And maybe I should save this for a future rant. But anyway, I thought this was good. I will dive into this a little deeper next week because I see a couple of articles that are clicking on to support this. And I'd like to look a little bit more at what we can do and parking garage design and various things that we can use to do this. But right now we're getting close to the end of the show. So I gotta move forward here and, we will talk a little bit here. The UCI World Cup. Oh, God. Norway, they canceled their championships. Anyway, next week, it's Overijse in Belgium for the last of the big World Cups before the World Championships, I do believe. So we got a lot of stuff that we can still talk about here. 2020 bike unit imports are up nearly 30% through November. That's a big deal. I'll get on to more of this. And the Sea Otter Classic and the Sea Otter event has been moved to October because of the ongoing COVID-19 concerns. The Colorado Classic plans to return to racing in 2022 and has canceled its 2021 event. And that's pretty much what I got for us today. The Taipei Bike Show is still on for March 3rd. It'll either be virtual or it'll be live. You never know. We don't know. Everything is just a big fat we don't know. Finishing points, Martin Luther King Day. Reflections of our past and future. Crossing over to cycling and proper bicycle justice. This is the year for so many changes. The handlebars are in front of you, and you are moving forward. Initiate and participate. That's my words for today. The views expressed on this program do not reflect the views of the staff, the management, or the licensee of this station. My name is Pedalin' Ron, and you've been listening to Bicycle Talk with my co-host, Fran Storch, a show where we talk about bicycle, bicycle culture, bicycle advocacy, upcoming news and cycling, the bicycle business, and the bicycle calendar. If you've been listening to us on Facebook Live, on the Bicycle Talk Facebook page, or on a podcast, and you'd like to comment, send an email to bicycletalk1@gmail.com. You can also listen to past episodes of Bicycle Talk on whus.org or now on iTunes or now on Spotify. If you want to contribute to the show, drop me an email. This is Pedalin' Ron. Remember, keep the rubber side down and the wind at your back. Get out and ride your bike. This is 91.7 FM WHUS Stores and whus.org. Thank you so much for listening.